So harboring is, generally speaking, one of the five acts that is mentioned in the international legal definition of trafficking in persons, together with, for example, transfer and recruitment. But harboring, and this came out of the study, is one of the most often cited acts to prosecute traffickers. So this is why we decided to do this study on really looking into what harboring actually means and what harboring actually means in different languages and in different countries, and to see whether or not this causes any obstacles, for example, in prosecution and investigating.
Could you just explain to me where this harboring takes place within the trafficking process? Because people are recruited and then they're exploited and sometimes they're moved to different locations. So where does harboring actually take place?
Harboring may take place at any time of the human trafficking process. The study specifically identified three different scenarios. So harboring that takes place even prior to exploitation. So the international legal definition does actually not require exploitation to have taken place. So it is possible that you, for example, keep a person with the intent of, for example, transporting them into another country where they are forced to work or forced into sexual exploitation. So it is enough that you keep them with the intent of exploiting them later on. So this is a form of harboring that happens prior to exploitation. A second scenario is when the one that is usually identified as human trafficking is when they are harbored at the same time as they are being exploited. This may happen, for example, in a hotel room where a person is being sexually exploited. So it's possible to harbor them in the in this hotel room or in any room in a brothel. So it's possible to harbor them at the same time as exploiting the victim. But there's also a third scenario, and this is where harboring takes place, not at the place where also exploitation takes place, but completely separate from the exploitation. I can give you an example. For example, if you force a child into going begging, so into forced begging on the street, the child is moving around all day in the city, but the child is then coming home in a place where they are kept over the night. So this is a scenario where harboring takes place alongside the exploitation, but not at the same time as exploitation. And interestingly, this is also, if we would prosecute this, this is also the place where harboring would be raised as the only act that is applicable in human trafficking. So this is why it's very important to be clear on what harboring actually means within the international legal definition.
If a case of trafficking does actually lead to a prosecution, what is the impact of proof that harboring existed to actually secure a conviction?
Usually experts kept telling us that for them harboring is a relatively straightforward manner, so that they rarely run into issues of having to prove harboring. But once we started to explain them and started to talk about what harboring means to them, it's only then that we realized that harboring is not as a straightforward concept that everybody thought it was. It is. For example, one of the issues that was raised that harboring especially is understood differently in different languages. So it's possible that, for example, that you have to prove that the person has been concealed or that the person's liberty has been restricted in order to constitute harboring. This is the case in some countries, but in not all of the countries. So the evidence that you need to show that a person has been harbored might be different in one country than in another, which also means that the trafficking might have happened in one country but not in another. And this has a severe impact on the alleged perpetrator, on the victim of trafficking, but also on the state and the state authorities, that they have available certain, for example, investigative methods that they would not usually have, for example, regarding a robbery. They do have them available if they are qualified in the right way. So it's these discrepancies that we try to show in our study on the issue paper of the concept of harboring.
For harboring to be seen as an act of trafficking, does the victim have to be physically restricted somehow? Does they have to be a minder? They're not allowed to leave the premises?
This may be a requirement in some of the countries, but not in all of the countries. This goes back to how harboring is understood, most notably in the different languages. For example, in English and in Russian, there is a certain negative connotation of what harboring means. It usually involves the concealment of or the hiding of the victim from authorities. But this is, for example, not the case in the French and in the Arabic versions of the word harboring. That is more used in the sense of hosting a friend or hosting a guest. So it's possible that, for example, that you do not have to show that the person has been hiding or physically controlling the person in order to harbor them, depending on where you are. So depending on in what language do you speak. So it is not necessarily a requirement for harboring to take place to limit the victim's liberty of movement.
If there is a different interpretation in a different language of the term harboring, what does this mean? What are the implications then for prosecutions, convictions?
The impact, or if harboring is understood differently, or if harboring is not understood in a comprehensive way, it might have an impact on three people. First of all, the alleged perpetrator. So for the perpetrator, knowing or not knowing if there is a charge on human trafficking has also, for example, an impact on the sentence, on the possible sentence that is given to the perpetrator. So being clear about the concept of harboring also means being clear whether or not human trafficking has happened. And this means in return that the perpetrator might face more severe or less severe sentencing depending on the qualification of what the behavior has been qualified as. A second person who is impacted by this concept or by the clarity of this concept is the victim. So the victim or the survivor of human trafficking often depends on being identified as a victim of human trafficking. There are in the law certain privileges and certain rights that a victim of human trafficking has, which all depend on the qualification or the identification of the victim of having been a victim of human trafficking. So for the victim, it is absolutely mandatory and absolutely important to know whether human trafficking has taken place or has not taken place. And thirdly, it's important for the investigator or the other state authorities to know whether human trafficking has taken place, because it allows them to use specific investigation tools that are only available, for example, in transnational organized crime or in case human trafficking has been committed, but also, for example, international collaboration. So there are certain mechanisms that are in place that depend on the qualification of human trafficking in order for investigators to be able to use them. So, and this one is very important, for example, also to be speaking the same language or to speaking the same legal language as, the, for example, another country is, that you have to be able to trust that when you talk about human trafficking, that this is the same or this is understood similarly in another country. And this is also where the study comes in, because we try to highlight elements or highlight situations in which this notion of harboring and this notion of human trafficking might be understood differently in one country to another, which impedes collaboration between the states and which in turn impedes prosecutions of the perpetrators.
What do we actually know about these places of harboring? Because the exploitation itself must be totally horrific. But where are these victims actually having to sleep or eat or, you know, take care of their personal hygiene? What is known about the places?
Victims might be harbored in different locations. This might happen in a hotel room. It might happen in a room in a brothel, but it might also happen on a shipping vessel or in a factory. It all depends on of what kind of form or what kind of exploitation we are talking about. So exploitation might be of sexual nature. So harboring might be taking place, as I mentioned, in a hotel room or in a brothel. But there are other forms of exploitation, for example, forced labor, where victims are harbored in a factory or in a house separate from the factory. But there's also other forms of exploitation, for example, human trafficking for the purpose of organ removal. So there, harboring may take place in a hospital room as well. And then we have certain elements or certain forms of human trafficking where harboring is less easy to identify. For example, harboring of sexual exploitation online. So there it becomes very difficult to know where exactly the place of harboring is and who controls this place of harboring. Or situations where the victims are harbored while on the move. So when is it possible or is it not possible that a lorry or a truck can be considered a place of harboring as well? So this is always depends on what the specific situation of the exploitation is and what kind of form of human trafficking we are talking about.